Welcome to Nightlife, the podcast.
Dr. Rakan Zahawi is the executive director of the Charles Darwin Foundation, which is part of the Floriana Ecological Restoration Project. And it is a delight to have you. Welcome to Nightlife.
Great to be here.
Look, before we get into the detail of this particular aspect of what's been happening on the island, can you paint a picture of Floriana for us?
Sure. So Floriana was the first island to be colonized in the archipelago, mainly because it was one of the few islands with a reliable source of fresh water. So in part because of that, it wound up becoming the most degraded island of the archipelago. You have this image, or most people have this image of Galapagos as being this pristine environment, and it is one of the best preserved and protected areas in the world, but there is degradation there too. So a number of species have been lost there, locally extirpated. Half the finch species that should be there are no longer there, for example. There's also a small human population there, about 150 residents. And then from a perspective of why pick Floriana, it's a challenge, but it's not impossible. So it's a medium-sized island, it's about 170 square kilometers. It's important. There's a lot of endemic species, like I said, some of which have been locally lost there that could be brought back. So it's a big challenge, but it's not impossible.
Yeah. This is the island, isn't it? People might even know it because of that recent movie that Ron Howard did, the Eden movie. That was Floriana, wasn't it?
That was Floriana.
Yeah. Not that that's any kind of documentary, of course, but it, the degradation comes from these earliest settlers. It's hard to believe anybody could really live there in a way. But as you say, fresh water made a difference. So Charles Darwin, of course, is famously associated with the Galapagos. He visited the islands in 1835. What did he did? Were the rats and the cats there already? When did they arrive?
The rats were probably there by then. Cats came later. Cats came once you had more permanent settlement in the island. Darwin was not impressed with Galapagos, given that his fame and his theory really largely came out of the collections that he made in just a few weeks that he was in Galapagos. When he first went there, he really wasn't impressed. He saw it as a very barren and inhospitable environment, which it largely is. And that it was incredibly uninviting. But he did remark on some of the really, the oddities of the species there, that there was, what we today we call ecological naivete, that species are just not scared of humans. So he could walk right up to animals and essentially just pick them up with his hand.
Yeah. So the animals were what? Left the lasting impression. The actual environment was in some respects nothing to write home about, although maybe it is something to write home about when it's like that. Tell me what had gone wrong on Floriana, just in terms of the impact of rats and cats.
So rats and cats are actually found on a number of islands in Galapagos. They are predators and feed on many different things. And these islands did not have these kinds of predators on the island before, so they wreaked havoc over time. In Floriana in particular, you couple that with a really devastating fire that happened in the early 19th century that burned the vast majority, if not the entire island, and it was probably a big part of the driver of species going extinct. But the last few decades, scientists who've been working there and monitoring native species have noted just that the incredible abundance of rodents and cats, who basically feed on young chicks of finches and marine iguanas and lava lizards and you name it. So they were really a primary target to address if you're going to start thinking about restoring the ecological balance on the island.
Yeah, it must be a massive task. And as I said, it was only back in 2023 that this bold project happened. So how do you do it? How difficult was it to get the rats and the cats gone? How was it done?
Yeah, I mean, so it's by eradication standards a pretty large island. So when it was first discussed more than a decade ago, a lot of people thought this was kind of a pie in the sky idea, and you know, wishful thinking, and just too complicated to execute. But you got to dream big with these things, and this is one of the amazing things about Galapagos, is because it's such a protected area, and because there's this real focus and interest in preserving and returning the balance here, not just in Floriana, but throughout the archipelago, you can do these you know, big initiatives. So it took a decade to get to 2023 in terms of planning, fundraising, and then the you know, everything that led up to it. Plus, you have that small population that lives on the island. There's some agriculture there. There's livestock, pigs, chickens, so on. So they had to build enclosures. They had to bring the people who are living on the island on board with this idea, and go through a sort of co-development process to get to the point where you do the eradication. I should add that a lot of that was done by partner institutions that worked on this island, conservation and the Hokotoko Foundation. Of course, the Galapagos National Park is intimately involved with this as well.
Yeah. Dr. Rakan Zahawi is my guest here on Nightlife tonight. He's the executive director of the Charles Darwin Foundation, which is part of the Floriana Ecological Restoration Project. I feel like it's an obvious answer to this question, but once you get rid of these predatory feral type animals, rats and cats, what happens, Rakan?
Yeah, so it was a massive undertaking. 3 months of spreading bait throughout the entire island. We actually had pilots brought in from New Zealand who have lots of experience with eradication on island systems to spread the bait. But what was extraordinary afterwards was just the almost immediate response of wildlife. So you had species that were rarely, if ever, recorded in annual bird censuses popping back in just really big numbers. So Galapagos dove from, you know, maybe one individual each year, our field teams would go out and do a census, to over 70 individuals captured, dark-billed cuckoo going from, you know, sporadic count of, you know, one every 2 or 3 years to over 50, and so on. So it was really just an immediate response that was really quite remarkable. And a couple of really key species, I don't know if I should mention them now, but the Galapagos rail and the medium tree finch, which are both, well, the Galapagos rail is incredible because hasn't been seen on the island in 200 years.
Wow.
And then the medium tree finch, which is, yeah, 200 years. Charles Darwin was the last person to actually cite the species on Floriana and I believe collected a specimen from there. And it hasn't been recorded since. You know, there've been some, not sightings, but people have heard the call or thought they've heard the call, but nobody's really recorded it. So, and then in the last few decades, nothing. So it was presumed lost from the island.
And now it's back, the Galapagos rail. And as you say, so so swiftly that this changed as well. You mentioned the medium tree finch as well. Unfortunately, the way that you and I are speaking through Zoom tonight, you won't hear this, but my nightlife audience listening tonight will hear this. I've got a recording of the sound of that Galapagos medium tree thing.
Oh, I heard it. Yes.
Oh, you can hear it. Oh, good.
I can hear it.
That last bit almost sounds mechanical, but is that the real thing?
Yeah. They're pretty funky.
So the sound of the island.
You should put them in that pop quiz you had earlier.
Well, maybe I will. I don't know where it fits. Does it fit into pop or tomorrow night's history? I mean, maybe we will bring it into the history quiz. But that must, you know, because you're talking about all these different birds that are coming back. That changes. You know, the beautiful thing about birds, of course, is the sound of birds, not just that you can see them.
Yeah.
But the sound of Floriana must be different now.
And that's one of the incredible things. So the local population, you know, some of them have lived there their whole lives. And you've got, you know, people in their 50s, 60s, 70s who remember when many of these species were more abundant and present on the island. And so part of what has happened with this eradication is the local residents have come to see the wildlife coming back and have been really happy to see that and sort of reminiscing about old times and so on. And then they've also seen that the removal of rodents and cats has resulted in their harvest doubling from one season to the next. So, you know, you don't have rats essentially eating half your corn plantings. So, you know, there's a lot of different levels there where that has creates this positive feedback. And then one of the reasons of tackling this island with a small population that you can work with is when you go to a bigger, you know, population center, San Cristobal or Santa Cruz, which have thousands of residents, they need to start hearing that positive feedback from the smaller population saying, you know, this was amazing. Not only do we have critters all over the place again, but we also have, you know, better harvests and you know, so they see an economic benefit as well.
Yeah. So, and this isn't the only thing that's going on with Floriana, as I understand it, because, you know, feral pests and animals are one thing. Invasive plant species, of course, are another that have affected the habitat of this island. I hope I'm saying this right. Scalesia, is it? Trees that are well known on the Galapagos?
Yeah, Scalesia or Scalesia.
Scalesia, They're obviously in and of their own way providing this quite unique ecosystem for animal species, but for also for other plant species. But as I understand, there's been a massive decline in their numbers too, and not just on Floriana. So what's caused that?
Yeah, so you have about 1,500 species that have been introduced to the Galapagos Islands over the last couple of centuries. Most of those species have not become invasive, but I would say maybe a dozen or 20 are particularly problematic. And so you have invasive species that are animals, such as rodents and cats that are a big problem, or goats that were eradicated on many islands in the 90s. But then you also have plants. You also have insects too that are a big problem for in some cases. But in the case of Scalesia and its decline, a big part of that is being driven by invasive plants. In this case, a blackberry, Rubus niveus, which is a blackberry species from the Himalayas that was introduced here actually intentionally in the 60s with the thought that it could be cultivated for fruit and juice and so on. It's actually not very good to boot. And then it became hugely invasive and problematic. And Scalesia is in the sunflower family. So think about, you know, daisies and giant sunflowers, but it's a tree. So it reaches heights of 10, 15 meters tall, but like most sunflowers, it has a short lifespan. In this case, it's more than a year. It's lives to 15 to 20 years maximum. So there's a lot of turnover in individuals. So in order for that species to continue to maintain its population, you have to have a lot of recruitment. You have to have a lot of young seedlings coming in and growing. They grow very fast. You know, 2 years they, or 3 years, they're sort of adult. They reach the canopy. But those first few months or few, when they germinate, they have a tiny, tiny wind dispersed seed. So there's really not much in terms of resources in that seed. And so light is critical at that stage. But if you have a thicket of blackberry in the understory, those seeds are germinate and they have no exposure to sun. And so you break that cycle. And that cycle over time, especially given the short lifespan of these trees, has resulted in the loss of you know, vast areas of Scalesia forests, not just in Floriana, but in other islands in Galapagos.
So what are you planning to do now? The Charles Darwin Foundation looking to save and improve different species, increase numbers. What will you do from here?
So that's a big part of the next phase in Floriana. So you've done that eradication. Actually, we have to do a second phase of eradication as well, probably towards the end of this year, in terms of fauna. But the habitat is I'm a plant person, so I'm going to have my bias, of course. But to me, the habitat is equally as important. It's often you know, animals catch people's attention, and it's where a lot of effort often goes. But you have to actually have the home in place as well for these species that you're going to reintroduce. So Floriana has lost 12, 13 species to habitat degradation and to, you know, all these other drivers that I talked about earlier. If you're going to bring them back in order to ensure that they have a successful establishment, re-establishment, you need to have the habitat in as intact a condition as possible. And so we're looking at the island. Again, this is a big challenge. There's a lot of different microhabitats and conditions. You've got a dry zone, you've got a transitional zone, you've got a humid zone. So you've got different kinds of conditions and species there. But to map that entire island out and initiate a restoration, habitat restoration program island-wide, basically push out the invasive plant species, you're probably not going to eradicate them entirely, but you can push them to the fringes, if you will, of the island. And because we're working with islands, you know, you've got an entire unit. If you're working just in one piece of that island, of course, the minute you stop doing the whatever intervention you're doing, you'll have reinvasion over time again. So you really need to think about this across the entire island.
Yeah, I mean, very few places, in, you know, have that opportunity because of that. You know, most places are not islands, are they? And you know, so I'm just wondering, do you think this is just a Galapagos story, or could it have wider implications and inspiration even?
Well, it's a great way of framing it. I think it has wider implications because this, a lot of the institutions based in Galapagos and working here have joined forces, if you will, to focus on Floriana and make this island a blueprint. So it's a great test site. A lot has been done. It's big. It's challenging. But, you know, it's not stretching everybody's abilities to the absolute maximum. So if we can get it right in Floriana, we can apply similar techniques to bigger, more complex island systems in Galapagos. And then the second piece you said, the inspiration, is this should inspire similar scale or even larger scale incentives around the world. And yes, island systems are very different from continental ones. But often island systems are much more fragile, and you need to put in a lot more resources to affect successful change in restoration than you do in continental systems. So there's absolutely a lot that you can apply from what you learn here into other systems around the world. But the inspiration word that you said, that to me is key. You know, Galapagos, because of its visibility in the world, it's really an important benchmark for how we test different initiatives. But that visibility carries well beyond the archipelago.
Yeah, well, this is certainly something to be very proud of, especially with the success you've seen with these birds, the Galapagos rail in particular. You know, to think that the last time it had been on the island was when Charles Darwin was visiting. I mean, that's just quite mind-blowing, to be honest. Dr. Rakan Zahawi.
It really is.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. Dr. Rakan Zahawi is the executive director of the Charles Darwin Foundation and has been talking to us about this Floriana Ecological Restoration Project. A real delight to have you spend some time with us here on Nightlife. Nice to have you on the program. Thank you so much.
You're most welcome.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.